White Sox! White Sox! Go! Go!
1, 2, 3!
Frazier swings high and deep left center field. Gone, 3-run homer. He went to the well, all right, and Frazier went to the bridge.
Juan Abreu is swinging a high fly deep right field.
At the wall, it's gone for a 2-run homer.
Frazier tags him, that's a triple play.
Oh my, that is one we were going to talk about for years to come.
Now, a special edition of White Sox Weekly. Scheduled to appear on this afternoon's broadcast. Harold Baines, Dan Jennings, as well as Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson.
Second for two on the first. Triple play. How about that one?
Live from the Hilton Chicago, it's special coverage of SoxFest 2017.
Look alive, Chicago.
On the proud home of everything White Sox, WLS AM 890. Now, here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Into a very special edition of White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We are at SoxFest 2017. Thanks for hopping in. Thanks for joining us. And a big thanks to David Hochberg and the crew for leading off this extravaganza. We've got a packed lineup all throughout the afternoon as we have passed into those hours. We'll be here today and tomorrow. And we'll be joined, of course, by White Sox players and coaches, former players, greats, all that kind of good stuff. We'll also be joined by the entire station lineup throughout the 2 days. Bob Surratt and Marianne Marciano are here right now. We'll have Brendan Greeley of the Steve Dahl Show swinging by, and either Big John or Ray, or maybe both. It's entirely possible if the flu bug hasn't taken out the both of them. We'll have them around, too. But to lead things off and to get things going, I guess we could move down the seats a couple here. We've got White Sox great Harold Baines with us, as well as Bob Surratt and Marianne Marciano hanging out with us, too. Harold, nice to have you. Good to see you. How is SoxFest 2017 for you? Have you started the weekend in full, or you have a lot more to go throughout the rest of the day?
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
No, everything's great. We got started actually Thursday. We had a big dinner with the sponsors.
Nice.
So it's going well.
And you, your role's changing a little bit here over the next over the last year into this year, kind of changing some, a little less travel, but a little bit of work with the team too. So as you change, kind of the squad changes some too. A lot of changes for the White Sox in the last month and a half.
Maybe that was the reason. I don't know.
I don't think you were the reason.
No, it was time to make a change. For my body and for my family. You know, I have fortunate enough to have 4 kids, and they all decided to get married in 2 years. So I've been busy with that.
So you've had 4 weddings in 2 years?
Yes.
4 weddings in 2 years?
Yes, 3 girls and a boy.
Are you paying for the boy's wedding too?
Yes, I
that
did.
Is not fair. aren't you supposed I to agree, just pay for the girl's wedding?
Not when your wife runs everything.
Choices are
all right.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Harold, nice to meet you.
Thank
I'm Marianne.
You.
Bob.
Yeah, I met Bob.
Yeah, Bob thinks you should be in the Hall of Fame.
I appreciate that, but I can't really.
I also think that Harold and I have a lot in common because, you know, I've been known to work at the various TV and radio stations and then leave and then come back to the same station again and again and again.
This only is my, 3 times. Only 3 times.
Yeah, well, you were at the Sox 3 times.
Right.
I've only been at WLS 2 different times, but I was at NBC 5 3 different times. So,
well, I actually did it with 2 teams.
That's right.
The Baltimore Orioles and the White Sox.
And each time you come back, does it seem like an entirely different new organization?
Not really. I mean, I always felt the White Sox was a family. You know, I got drafted in 1977, and they treated me like a son more than just a player. Jerry's a very special individual, and I'm from Baltimore. So it was like going home after 14 years to play and sleep in my own bed.
Did you get to spend some good quality time with Minnie Mignoso?
I did.
Yeah?
It was like a second father.
Yeah? Tell me about that.
A very special man. I mean, I couldn't understand him.
You know what? I couldn't understand him in English or Spanish.
Well, I know a little bit of poquito Spanish, but he was a great man. He treated me as one of his sons. You know, I played with Orestes, one of his sons in the minor leagues, but Manny was a very, very special man to me.
The last time Bob and I got a chance to speak with him, and he had made several radio appearances and TV appearances with us over the years, but I was really impressed because it was probably the last year of his life, and this man was still doing 100 sit-ups a day, every single day, even until the end. He was doing
sit-ups. How old was he? Nobody knew how old he was.
He claimed to be, at that time, what, 89 or something? Is that like saying 39?
Well, he had 89. A kid at 60-something.
Right.
Well, Connor, so, you can do like 200 so, push-ups.
Yeah, give it up.
So
yeah,
he would do time, right?
So he would do these sit-ups, and then he said, it was his routine before taking a shower.
Really?
So sometimes if he had to take a shower twice a day, which he often did, he would do it twice a day.
Well, some of that could be false because if the White Sox won a game, he didn't change his clothes. That's how superstitious he was.
Really?
Really.
What were his other superstitions?
That was his biggest one. I mean, you want the White Sox to win. So, you know, if we won 10 in a row, you saw the same outfit every day when he came in the clubhouse.
What are your superstitions?
I don't really have any. I just try to stay healthy enough to get on the field. That's very hard to do.
If he's not changing his clothes, it's some. You know, I know everybody
I'm not
wants
saying
to
he's
win
not
ball
washing
games. Well, that's what I had to ask. Because at some point, you know, those planes are small. The bus rides are there.
No, this is in Chicago.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
He didn't travel with us.
Okay. Okay. I thought we were talking about back in his, you know, playing days and stuff when he weren't.
No, this is when he was an ambassador for the Sox.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it, you know, it takes a special level of superstition to be superstitious when you're not playing.
No. That's how much he loved the White Sox.
That's impressive. Yeah. That is impressive. I wanted to ask you about, speaking of the Hall of Fame, a guy who either you know, were alongside, next to, or playing contemporary with, Tim Raines, who just got into the Hall of Fame.
Very well deserved.
Very well deserved. Mm-hmm. And I thought what was interesting about his, you know, his time with the White Sox, his time in Montreal, you spent some years in Montreal and then came over to the White Sox.
Who?
And looking at, oh, no, sorry, Tim Raines.
Tim Raines.
Yeah, I think I said you. I meant Tim.
We all look alike, I understand.
Come on now. wow, I'm never going to get over that one. That hurts a little. Tim's career, especially with the White Sox and doing what he did at the top of the order, was unparalleled. And I wonder if you think, playing at around the same time, if you think that being a contemporary with Ricky Henderson maybe hurt him on the ballot some over his 10 years on the ballot.
It shouldn't have. I mean, he got in the Hall of Fame on his last time.
His final year.
His numbers didn't change.
No.
So if you're good enough on the 15th time, you should have been good enough on the first time for me.
Do you think that should change in our Hall of Fame voting and the way we put guys in?
Yes. But it's very hard to get in there. I mean, if you need 73% to get in anything, it's hard to get in.
Right.
So, you know, but I don't really know all the ins that what goes along with that, so it's kind of hard to really to comment on it.
Well, like any voting, there's politics involved, and there's, you know, sports writers who are going to get, or baseball writers who have their opinions on guys and players and personalities and whatnot. But I'm with Harold. I mean, if you're on the ballot for 10 years, your stats don't change. It seems like if you're good enough the one time, you ought to be good enough, you know, each and every time around, or the first time around.
Well, I assume that the guys that the writers are want to vote for a certain guy that particular year, so that might knock the other guy backwards
right. A
little bit. So that's the tough part of it.
Yeah.
What were your favorite things to do when you were not playing?
In the wintertime or
in
the, like off
in the wintertime? Yeah, when you were like when it was off season, like what would do?
If you have a family, you got to get to know your family again.
Exactly.
So that was number one. But I was an avid golfer, so I play a lot of golf. But my number one priority was to get to know my kids again.
Did they live in the same city as you did?
But once they started school age, we had to set roots somewhere. And I'm from Maryland, so the kids stayed in Maryland. They came out once school was out. But once school started, we kept them in a safe environment.
And what was that like? I always wonder about this with baseball players because it's such a long season.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like having to be away for so long? I mean, there was a time when Bob considered working in the business.
Well, I had
and
an
we
offer.
We were dating. He had an offer.
I had an offer.
We were dating, and I was saying,
I wisely said no.
You cannot be gone that long. You know, I mean, but of course, the offer was not to play baseball,
no,
by the way.
No.
Well, it is baseball, but it's a job first.
Right.
So you got to take care of your family. And fortunately, I had a wife that understood that.
So was it, I mean, did you get to go and, you know, stop in sometimes during the season? Or was it like you're gone from beginning to
every,
end?
Every off day in Chicago, I was back in Maryland.
Oh, wow. You probably accrued a lot of flying miles.
Well, not back then. They didn't give me flyer.
They didn't have frequent flyer plans.
Not back then.
Nice ring, Harold.
It took me 25 years to get this ring.
Do you wear that ring? I was looking at it. I was admiring it. Do you wear that all the time?
No.
No.
Not going to the gym.
Right. Well, it would get in the way of
only
like,
during the baseball
gym
season.
Gloves.
Yeah. Only during the baseball season.
That ring, kind of describe the ring it and is tell the, us about the ring.
It's the 05 championship ring. It's got the big, is that a, I forget what the black stone in the middle, is that an opal? Is that what that is?
Or onyx?
In the
Do you
That's Marianne's
that?
Department.
No,
jewelry
I don't
is her department.
Actually, his wife designed this. Jerry Reinsdorf's wife designed
That's
this.
Right. That's right.
This ring. That's why most rings are square, and this is oval.
And it's got the two bands of diamonds, kind of subset, you know, behind it. Oh, and you've got the Baines on it on the side. Does everybody have it personalized?
Yes. But
not every, yeah, that's awesome.
Harold, do you ever think, man, if I was single and had a ring like this, I would be waving it around at all the singles bars, and it would be tremendous.
No, I'm kind of a loner, so I didn't really go to bars, and I don't drink. So.
And your children are now what ages?
They range from 32 to 26.
Oh wow. That's real close. So they were in college at the same time. They were in high school at the same time, right?
Three in college at the same time.
Yeah. That's so fun.
Not on the pocketbook. It's not
right,
fun.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I was being sarcastic.
But I've been blessed with four beautiful kids, so it was all worth it.
Where do they live? Do they live in Maryland
still? They all live within an hour of our house.
Of your house? In Maryland?
In Maryland, yes.
Yeah. That's a nice area.
Four weddings in 2 years. I'm still getting over that.
That sounds
insane.
Like the name of a movie, Connor.
Yeah, right.
Four weddings in 2 years.
That's a romantic comedy starring Harold Baines and his four kids. That's exactly how that works.
Well, I've been told I'm not that romantic, so it couldn't be. I couldn't star in that movie.
Harold, did you ever think that when you got done playing that you would get into broadcasting? How much did you think about life after baseball when you were playing, and what did you have in mind for yourself?
I actually thought I would play 10 years and retired.
Really?
But I actually played 22.
Yeah, 79 to 02.
What went into the 10 years thinking?
I was young and dumb, didn't figure. But then the kids came along, and expenses came along, so... Then I said, you know, I only know one thing, baseball. I came out of high school. I didn't really have anything to fall back on education-wise because I didn't go to college. So I figured I had to play. I would play until the phone stopped ringing. So the phone started ringing at the age 43.
Oh, that's wow. An incredible career. And did you think one day I want to manage, one day I want to coach?
Not manage. I mean, unless you get a ring, it's not really, it's too much stress and, you know, a lot of people don't see what a manager goes through. It's not just your X's and O's like a football, but you gotta manage 25 kids, 25 different personalities.
And then with all the people interviewing you over the years, did you look at guys like Connor and say, I can do that.
I didn't get really a lot of interviews because my answers were yes, no, evidently.
You were one of those guys.
I wasn't a Ryan Kittle.
You were not media trained.
I was trained.
No,
trained to keep them away from me.
Harold, those are answers with a purpose if you're a ball player. You start to learn that if you give certain answers, then maybe you don't get asked those questions anymore.
I mean, they're a little easier. They're honest answers.
There you go.
Hey,
you
know, Connor, is that what you, like, you stay away from
we
the
start
guys?
To learn. Yeah, no, it's a
like
learning
Harold,
process.
Right?
Yeah, no, it's a learn. We know. You know, you go down to that clubhouse and you kind of make that eye contact and you go, okay, we're good. We're good for the day. I understand what we're up to here.
Now, I always think, you know, if I were a Major League Baseball player, first of all, if that happened, there would be something wrong with Major League Baseball. But if I were a Major League Baseball player, a couple of things would happen to me. First of all, I would be jumping in the stands every now and then because there'd be somebody there who obviously is not in shape to play any sport yelling at me, and I would be bothered by that. And I would also be reading the newspapers and watching everything where my name was mentioned, and I would probably contact the people who wrote anything or said anything bad about me, and I would do that constantly.
You probably wouldn't last long.
Would you be worried about crowd size too, Bob? Would you be concerned with that?
Do you develop a thick skin in the minor leagues and it doesn't really ever affect most of the guys?
No. Some guys are, you know, you're dealing with personalities. My personality, it can roll off my back. So, you know, some guys couldn't take it.
But you hear things at the park, right? You hear the fans. Don't you?
You hear him, yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly it was Harold, not too many boos in Chicago.
Yeah, in your case, that's true.
Play well enough and it gets over for you.
Yeah.
Harold, thanks so much for stopping by.
Very welcome.
Really appreciate you hanging out. We got a packed list of guests. I'm Connor McKnight, Bob Surratt, Marianne Marciano here with us. We'll take a quick break here at SoxFest 2017. You got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Tomorrow, it's Jimmy Butler and the Bulls versus Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers. Broadcast begins at 5:30.
The Chicago Bulls lay here.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back. Let's try it this time. Welcome back to... It's on. Welcome back to Sox Fest, White Sox Fest. Sox Fest 2017. Sorry, we're having microphone issues up here. And by we, I mean me, and I can't find the on-off button. Marianne Marciano and Bob Surratt with us here at Sox Fest, a special edition here on White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890. Just got done hanging out with Harold Baines, who rightfully insulted me for mistaking the careers of Tim Raines and Harold Baines and looking at the wrong stat page. But Harold set me straight, as he often does and has with White Sox players for quite some time and in his own career, too. You guys are – thanks for coming by and hanging out and everything.
Yeah, it was fun to be here. And I was just talking to Harold, off mic during the commercial break. And, we were talking about Cuba, and mm-hmm. he has been there. He went back, at one point in 1999, and it was really – super fun to talk to him about that. What a nice guy. What a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. No, he's one of the good ones. And we get to talk to him every Sox Fest, and it's awesome that he stops by and comes through for White Sox fans. I know he's a fan favorite. I wanted to ask you guys about, speaking of Cuba, I was going to ask you about it. I saw yesterday during the media session that we all kind of get to hang out with players and say hello and reacquaint ourselves. I saw one of the young ones, one of the new ones, Yoan Moncada and Jose Abreu, hanging out with the both of you, and I wondered what. Come on, what? How did you guys wrangle that?
Well, they didn't care about me.
No, I know.
Well, we took him behind the curtain, and thank you, Connor, for having everything to do with making that happen, because we really appreciated it. Because I don't know. My feeling is that when we first started talking to them, they were kind of like a little gun shy at first. Do you notice that too?
Sure. And I think, I was talking with Ricky Renteria, the new manager of the White Sox, who is himself, bilingual and a first-generation American. And we were talking kind of off mic about how I can't imagine how difficult it is to be yourself in a setting in a second language, in a language that you don't quite comprehend yet.
Well, and part of the interview, which I think is, did we find out that it's posted already?
I think it is.
On the WLS AM site, I think. But anyway, you'll see part of the interview. At one point, I said to Jose, because Bob was asking me questions to ask them, and I was thinking of questions that I wanted to mm-hmm. ask them as well. And every time that I looked at Jose Abreu's face, he looked like he understood everything that was being said in English. But then I asked him, and he said, no, ask me, translate mm-hmm. in Spanish. He might feel a little bit insecure about that.
I think some of those guys are, like Jose Quintana yesterday had his conversation. And, of course, Jose's, his name's out there on the trade block. It's possible that he could be moved. A lot of White Sox fans have asked those questions throughout Sox Fest. And Jose Quintana, I should say, not that Jose Abreu isn't, but a stand-up guy and wants to be there. And you can tell that he understands generally what's going on. But I think a lot of those guys want to have that interpreter there. Billy Russell does a great job with the White Sox of helping these guys out and making that transition just to make sure that nothing's missed.
Right, because there are so many subtleties, nuances, and they obviously have to be understanding stuff because English is the spoken language. But, to be a young guy, those guys are, I think they're 21 and 29 years old.
Yeah, Jose's 29.
29.
Yoan just turned 21.
Just turned 21.
Yeah, and I was
they're
asking,
kids.
I was asking Jose Abreu, and of course I would ask a question, and then Marianne would translate, and then I would ask Marianne, what did he say? But I did understand a couple of things without the translation, because at one point I think I said to Abreu, I said, who's gonna watch this guy? Who's gonna be in charge of this guy? And he, what did he say?
He got a big kick out of it. He said, "I'll be his guardian."
Yeah,
I'll be his guardian. But he said it with a little, I don't know, wink, wink.
Sure.
Like who's gonna be able to, be his guardian? I don't know.
Well, I think too for Yoan Moncada, and it's possible that he starts out the season in AAA. He'll be up with the White Sox, I think, in short order. But for him being even younger than Jose Abreu, Jose Abreu is – legend is probably stating it too far. But in the baseball community in Cuba, which is a hot one as it is, like he is so well respected in that – in his own town, in that on that island, in the baseball community, just the kind of guy he is. And I've heard Yoan in Spanish kind of talk about how in reverence almost of Jose Abreu.
Well, he considers him an older brother. What I said to him was, he's more like your father, isn't he? And he says, no, but an older brother, because they played together in Cienfuegos,
yes,
in Cuba. And he said from day one, all he wanted was to be like Jose. That's all he wants.
And we spent about a half hour with them, and like an idiot, I then say to our program director, well, this will be great. We have the video for social media, and then we'll take the audio and we'll play it on our 10 a.m. to noon weekday show. Mm-hmm. And then I'm reminded, well, most of it was in Spanish. So I guess I guess that's not going to fill time during the week for us.
We could have somebody edit the English parts, because I did try, and it'll just be me talking to you.
doing different voices for Jose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly. That'll translate perfectly. Yeah.
They were so cute, though. I was so impressed, and I would encourage anybody. I mean, like, I am dying to see these guys now on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, now that I got to know them, and also, by the way, and Connor, I'm hoping that through your magic you can make this happen, but I asked them, you know that I have a food, we have a food website,
susosfork.com,
mm-hmm. S-U-S-O-S. FORK.com. And that's also the name of our YouTube channel. So we're posting all these videos, and we will be posting the video also of our conversation with them. But I asked them if they know how to cook. And
usually baseball players don't know how to cook.
Okay, thank you. I should have talked to you first.
Well,
because they both
sometimes
jumped at it and said, because wait, didn't Sammy Sosa know how to cook? I think that Sammy Sosa knew how to cook.
Yeah, he knew how to, cork. He knew how to cork.
There it is.
Okay, so they both jumped at the answer to this question immediately, like, no, we don't know how to cook, but Jose said, I would like to learn. And then I thought, oh my God, I would like to teach you. And then,
yeah, they were all for that.
Yeah, and then Yuan said, he said, I can make a little egg.
Big eggs he can't make. Just
big
the
eggs
ones
he can't make, but he says, un huevito.
312-591-8900. We'll have some room for phone calls here on White Sox Weekly throughout the afternoon, but we've got the 12:30 news coming up. Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano hanging out with us here at Sox Fest. After the 12:30 news, Tyler Danish, a nice guy and a great story coming up to hang with us here at Sox Fest 2017. I'm Connor McKnight. You have WLS AM 890.
Hi there, John and Ray, back Monday. Well, we survived week number one. I wonder what week number two brings us.
Week number two is going to be great. We're making America great again. John and Ray, back Monday morning.
WDLS AM 890.
Here at Sox Fest, I'm Connor McKnight, and with me, Bob Surratt, Marianne Murciano, and also Tyler Danish is hanging out with us here for a little while. Hi, Tyler. How are you, man?
Great. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Doing fantastic. Meet Bob Surratt. He does our midday show here on WLS.
I've been reading up on you, young man. And is this right? When you were in high school, and you went to high school in, was it Plant City?
Plant City, yes, sir.
Where's that, Marianne? You're the Floridian expert here. Do you know Plant City?
It's in Florida.
Marianne grew up in Coral Gables.
Okay. Plant City is where the Cincinnati Reds used to be back in, I think, like the 70s or 80s. So, small town, Lakeland, the Tigers, spring training is probably 10 minutes from where I went to school.
So, near Lakeland, Florida. The
near Lakeland, probably 10 minutes outside of Lakeland.
So you shop at Publix Supermarket.
I shop at Publix Supermarket.
Yeah,
Marianne bagged groceries there.
Oh, yeah.
So, in high school, at one point, you had a streak of 94 innings without allowing an earned run, right?
That's right. My senior year didn't give up one earned run.
Okay, I want to ask
now,
you about high school.
Is that good? Hold on a second. I need to drill down on this. Now, are you one of those guys that just threw so hard the kids couldn't even see the ball when they came up there?
No. I mean, the district I played in that year, we had four first-rounders come out of that district, and they're all hitters. But, no, I think the movement for me was my thing. You know, that's my bread and butter to this day, and I think that's what it was in high school.
What do you mean by that?
Like, I just throw everything. All my fastballs, no four-seamers, all sinkers. So just balls that just run in on people, run away from people. Just
disappear.
Yeah.
That they disappear. Okay, so let me ask you about high school and playing in high school, because we have a daughter who plays basketball in high school and tennis in high school. And it's, I mean, I know that the major leagues, the minor leagues, you know, that's pretty competitive. But in high school, it is pretty competitive, too. Isn't it a crazy scenario in high school to be playing, you know, against, there's so many kids who are good.
Right. That's what I loved about it, though, because every night you face someone that was, you know, you're going to play in the future as well, either in college or maybe in professional baseball. And, you know, every night you go out, and especially in the state of Florida, you know, being a big baseball, they call it a baseball, you know, place where everyone comes out of. And, you know, that was, you know, the most fun time I think I've ever had on the baseball field was in my senior year of high school.
Did you know, and did you know then, like, at what point does a kid in high school know this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life?
I think it really hit me. The first professional team I've ever talked to was the Chicago White Sox. It was going into my senior year in the summer. We played a tournament at a college, and the scout who drafted me, I met with him for the first time then, and that's when it really hit me. You know, I got a chance to, you know, go professional, because, you know, as a kid you dream about it, but
right.
it's obviously a hard reality to get to. So I was just hoping to go to college, and then, you know, that's when my senior year, I figured I had a chance.
And how did that make you feel? I mean, that must have been, I can't even imagine being a kid who dreams about this, and then all of a sudden a scout finds you, and then you see this real opportunity. What did you think then? As a 17, you were probably 17 years old,
17
right?
years old.
Yeah.
It was a blessing, but it also was the most amazing time of my life, because it just felt like everything that I've, you know, dreamed about, that I worked for, finally was starting to come together slowly. Obviously, it wasn't, you know, the big dream I had was to get to the big leagues, which I got to do that, but I also want to stick. But then was, you know, I had three tiers: get to the big leagues, get drafted, and then stay forever. So that was the first one, I guess, in my book that I got to check off, and it was just an amazing time.
Was the conversation with your family, people around you, about either going to college or coming out and choosing the draft? I mean, you got drafted in the second round. So I would imagine because you went that high, was the conversation tough to either choose school or choose the draft?
Yeah. You know, me and my mom sat down. There was a lot of talks also with my agent. And, you know, the big thing is we had a number that we believed, we called it life-changing money.
There you go.
Yeah. That I couldn't pass up. So, you know, I luckily got that number and, you know, went professional.
Do you know, I mean, is it the case that there are a lot of kids who don't have a strategy like you obviously did, and then they take anything? I mean, did you find that some of the people you knew did that and didn't think it through like you did?
Or you know, everyone's in a different way. I mean, everyone's got different numbers that they want, different amounts of money that they believe they can't pass up. Or, you know, some kids don't like school. I was one of those kids. I'm perfectly honest with you. I did not like school. So that was another reason for me. You know, I didn't want to go to school, but if I had to, I would have loved to, because University of Florida was going to be a great school. And
oh, yeah.
It's never too late.
Right. I am going to get a degree. I do. Yeah. I do want to go back and get that taken care of eventually. Don't know when, but I do want to get taken care of.
Well, you got work to do coming up in spring. Obviously, this season with the White Sox, there has been some turnover on that roster. I would imagine for a guy like yourself, who, like you said, major league debut last year, and congratulations on it.
Appreciate it.
I know that's a huge thing to check off for a lot of guys after you get drafted. There's competition coming up here when you hit Glendale, and I wonder if this year is a little different for you than years prior, because, you know, they're jobs to go get.
Right. That's the exciting part. I know everyone, you know, all the young guys that are going to camp are excited, because everyone has that good opportunity to, you know, make that team, or not, if you don't make it, at least show all the coaches what you have.
Yeah.
So it's going to be exciting. I know everyone's excited. I know a lot of the fans are excited. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's ready to get this going, and I know for sure I am.
Have you had a chance to sit down with or hear from or talk with Ricky Renteria?
Yet? I have a little bit here and there. I know that man's on the run all the time right now. So
well, and even when he talks to you, he's on. I mean, he's moving somewhere. He's got
always a
purpose to what he's talking to you about. He's intense.
He is, but I love the energy he brings. You know, that's you know, a great sign. You know, for us, you know, young kids with a manager with some energy is going to be a lot of fun.
Wanted to ask you, too, about working with Don Cooper. I mean, you get up to the bigs, and you get to have that conversation. I'm sure Coop works with you at some points during spring, and you get that kind of talk from the pitching staff throughout the minors, but knowing that that guy knows what he knows about pitchers. I mean, you've seen his work. You know what those guys go on to do. Was that just an eyes open moment?
Yeah, I mean, you try and take in everything he says to you, no matter what it is. You try and take it in because he's been around, you know, so long.
100 years, right. 150 years, something like that. Yeah,
and so he just has so much knowledge that you know you can take and just run with and learn from.
I want to know when Tyler Danish got the word that he was going to the big leagues. I want to know what your reaction was, and then I want to ask you about how it was when you got in your first game. Because I know I'm thinking that certainly when you first come to the major league team, it's very intimidating. Was it for you?
It wasn't intimidating in the locker room because I went to camp with the team for 2 years before. Prior to last year, so you know, I knew the guys a little bit, and they were very welcoming. When I got the call, I was actually watching a Netflix show. We had a day game that day, so I was about to go to sleep, which is crazy because I think the week before someone was asleep when they got the call up.
Wait, were you watching Prison Break?
How did you know that?
Because I was going to ask you because I've been doing a little research on you, and I was going to ask you about that because I was wondering if you've ever seen Bob's appearance on Prison Break.
You were on Prison Break?
I was a reporter, but if you blinked, you missed me.
Well, I might have to go rewatch that. But
season
yeah,
three, episode seven, Bob Surratt in the left hand corner.
So you're watching TV, and Prison then you Break. Get the call.
I do. It was probably 11:30 at night, and manager calls me and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "You know, just watching Netflix." He said, "What are you watching?" I said, "Prison Break."
There's a guy on here who's he should win an Academy Award or an Emmy or something. His portrayal of a TV news anchor is fantastic.
Yeah, right.
And
so
his next comment is, "Well, you're going to remember this episode for the rest of your life because you're going to Chicago tomorrow." And that was. I didn't know what to say to him. I said, "Are you serious?" And he said, "Yes." So I called my mom, and, you know, thinking my mom's going to go crazy. And she just says, "Oh, that's cool. I'll look for some flights." And I'm like, I'm shaking. I'm nervous as can be, and she's calm as can be. And I'm just like, wow.
You know? Do you have siblings?
No, only child.
So your mom was going to move to wherever she was going to find a place.
She got there. She got there the next day. She flew in, and she stayed for the whole week. So it was. I'm glad that she got
there. You get to the mound for the first time, and you're in that game, and you're walking out there. What goes through your mind at that point? How do you calm down?
I tried, but didn't really work. I just remember I got on there, and once it started, I just blacked out, to be perfectly honest with you. I remember a little of it, but not a lot. I was just, you know, so nervous, and it was amazing time and amazing atmosphere because we had the Royals in town. I think we had a sellout that day as well, so it was just, you know, altogether a perfect setting.
Well, you came up out of AA too. I mean, you got that call in AA. There aren't, I mean, some people come up out of AA, but it's fairly rare. I imagine you never expected to come from AA.
I mean, that was always the goal. You know, going into last year, you know, be good enough and get up.
Yeah.
And you know, Bobby Jinks was in there the next day or the week before, and he said that he told us the same story. You know, I came up from AA, so you're not far away. And a week later, there it is. And you know, it's definitely. You have to remember that they called you up for a reason. You know, they believe you should be there, and you need to believe in yourself that you can be there and pitch well and do what you need to do.
I've got a ball in my hand here. I play catch with our 16-year-old daughter, and I also still, if I can find somebody to play fast pitch with me against a wall, I'll still do it. I'm one of the few guys who still throws a screwball. How come nobody throws a screwball anymore?
I have no answer for you there. I have no idea, but I think maybe I can learn it.
And guys will throw that circle change. That's pretty close to. I mean, that action is a little close to it.
It is. I have small hands, so I can't do a circle change. I have to fork the ball.
So you wedge it in between.
I wedge it in ring. And
if I'm throwing a fastball, are my fingers supposed? I've never been able to get this straight. Are my fingers supposed to be right on the seams?
Some guys do it like that. I have small hands, so I have to be on the seam. Some guys go fingers together.
And what pitch do you throw where your fingers are across the seam?
That would be a four-seamer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I know.
What are the attributes of pitchers, and do you think that you fall under the stereotypical attributes of a pitcher? I mean, do you think you're like most pitchers?
No.
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 And so how are you different from, like, the typical pitcher?
How am I
pitcher?
Different? Well, one, I'm 6'5" on a good day. That's not too tall for many pitchers. And I also come from a low, you know, three-quarter unorthodox, they call it, you know, angle. So, you know, you look at me and you look at a guy like Carson. We're way, you know, two different people. I'm sure Kopech and Giolito are two different people. You know, every pitcher has their own, you know, style of how they do things. So everyone's different, but for me, I'm just a little unorthodox with the motion.
The deception has to help. I mean, if you can hide something from a hitter, then you've got a leg up on them.
Yeah, if you can get any advantage on a hitter as a pitcher, you know, you're going to take it. Guys who have deception are very hard to pick up. You know, the ball seems to jump on hitters, they call it, and they seem like it gets in a little quicker on their hands and stuff like that.
We got to head to a break here, but I want to ask you right before we let you go, you're healthy, off-season surgery, ready to roll, and I would imagine for you the goal is to break camp with the club if you can, right? I mean, that right. has to be
100% healthy, and you know, that's the goal going in, is, you know, make that team, and if I do not and go to AAA, be ready whenever the call is needed.
Well, I hope that your third part of your strategy happens and that you stay forever.
I appreciate that. That's the goal, and that's what everyone works for. So,
Tyler, appreciate you stopping by. We will we'll see you a little later and see you in spring.
Awesome. Thank
Absolutely.
You, guys.
Thank you, Tyler.
Good Absolutely. Luck to you.
Appreciate it.
Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano here with us for White Sox Weekly at SoxFest 2017. I'm Connor McKnight. We got a packed list of guests coming up for the rest of the show. First-round pick Zach Collins is going to join us right about 1 o'clock. Ed and DJ swing by at 1:30. We'll just tell stories with them. Dan Jennings and Zach Birdie, who both throw very, very hard, are going to join us as well. 312-591-8900. A little space for phone calls when we get back. You got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Steve Dahl is here. Weekday afternoons 3 till 7 on WLS AM 890.
To White Sox Weekly here at SoxFest 2017. I'm Connor McKnight, and with me, Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano of the Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano Show from 10 until noon on WLS AM 890. It was convenient that you guys were hired to do the same show.
Yeah, yes, it is.
It really
makes
works
it a
out
little
well.
Easier. And I should point out before we go any further, because people do come up to me and, you know, give me the business about being a Cubs fan, and over the years they know about my connection with that team. Let me just say, first of all, there are too many people on that bandwagon right now.
It is an overloaded bandwagon.
Yes, and also I want to make a little bit of room for some new people. And also, I feel in some ways that a lot of my work for the Northsiders has been accomplished now. And since since they won it all last year and the Sox haven't won it all since 2005, I thought maybe I'd help out a little bit on the South side this year.
Because Bob takes complete credit mm-hmm. for the Cubs winning the World Series.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I mean, as the White Sox slowly start to rebuild and bring in a bunch of young talent, we need talent on the fringes, too. Guys like you and me. And
don't call yes. Bob on the fringe.
Oh, that's what we need.
That's exactly right. I'm on the fringe.
That's exactly how we're going to help build this thing
And I've
up.
Said this many times over the years on TV and radio, that it's fun to be in a city where you have different ballparks, you have the National League, the American League, and we always have enjoyed taking the family out to whatever it's called, Comiskey Park, the Cell.
Guaranteed rate.
Thank
now.
You.
Yep.
And they do a great job, really, especially, I especially always love those fireworks nights, and the food is always
Saturday
great
nights.
Out there.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's just fun to, and I'm one of those guys who can travel around the country and go to a Major League Baseball game anywhere and enjoy it, which I think, I don't know that the NFL, the NBA, the NHL has that kind of appeal, does
it? It's not the same draw. It's an everyday thing that baseball is, you know, it's both a grind and kind of this blessing that it's always there for you. And players talk about this a lot, too. And I think it's, you know, whether it's Tyler or whether it's Harold Baines, you know, years before when he was playing, there's tomorrow's game's coming regardless of what you did yesterday. And there's this, it can feel, especially when you're interviewing players or when you're talking to them, you know, it can feel like it's rote or like mm-hmm. some of the comments are a little bit cliche. But how would you operate if you didn't have that in your mind, that each next day was a brand new one? How
well,
would you possibly deal with
it's
failure?
It's like us when we do shows. I mean, you can't, like, you know, overthink what you did no. or said yesterday, because it's like, yeah, there's a new one tomorrow.
Yeah,
right?
Many times after a TV or radio broadcast, I've had to have rotator cuff surgery. So there is
that. Yeah, it's exactly like that.
And you know what? I still turn into a 12-year-old kid whenever I'm around Major League Baseball players, whether it's Sox Fest or any other fest. And yesterday, I was thrilled to not only meet Carlton Fisk and have a chance to talk to him for the first time, but then it turns out he watched us on TV when he was here, and I feel like a kid around him. In fact, we took a picture. We've got it posted on Facebook.com/Serrat and Murciano. Is that the site, Marianne? Is that it?
That is that the right? site, Bob.
So the picture, I
Serrat
swear,
and Murciano.
The guy looks like, imagine him without his glasses and a little younger. I say he looks like Larry Lujack. Take a look and let me know what you think.
Well, and also it was very funny when you told him that.
Oh,
because
right.
What was his reaction, Bob?
He said, oh, yeah, animal stories.
That's fantastic. It's funny to see, like, especially to talk to some of the guys who you grew up watching, whether you're my age or whatever age you are, and they kind of have that connection, you know, to you guys since you've been part of this town in such a real way, and really whether it's baseball or not, that exists in a daily basis,
right.
The same
way. You don't think that that's the case, but because you have them on a plateau. You really do. At least many of us do.
Right, but you go back, and what I was thinking about Carlton Fisk yesterday when he said that was that, okay, this guy, he didn't just play baseball. He got up in the morning, and he made breakfast, and then he
did
got
some
dressed.
Squats.
Right. He did. He was like a normal guy, you know, when he wasn't on the field, yeah. But we do tend to build these people up and think, oh, you know, like this.
Especially us boys.
God.
Well, Fisk,
yeah.
for me,
boys.
I mean, he hit one of the most iconic home runs in Major League history. I mean, and just, I can't see him without thinking, and yeah, it's with the Red Sox and everything, but I can't see him without
motioning.
Watching him waving the ball and hoping and praying that it stays. I just.
Exactly.
And that's, I mean, that's the kind of stuff where I can go little kid on
sure.
it, too.
Hey,
I mean,
it's Hall
really
of Famer.
Easy. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Connor, were you always a baseball fan?
Yeah.
Or what?
Always growing up, I was a huge baseball fan. I was just, I don't know why, but it just kind of spoke to me more than other sports. And really, in a lot of ways, like, you know, Tyler making the big leagues. I mean, this was, you know, kind of my dream, you know, doing baseball.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So did you always know that you were going to work in sports?
I always knew that I wasn't going to be a player because I was terrible. I could not hit a breaking ball to save my life. So that it kind of went away quickly.
So you're tall. You're tall. You should have been on the mound.
Well, I pitched a little bit, and I got turned around a lot, too. You know, I mean, I got really used to the motion where you throw and then look up in the air as the ball sails over the wall. I got really used to that.
Uh-huh.
Had a lot of conversations.
Yeah, a lot of conversations.
But you did know that you wanted to go into broadcasting.
I wanted to be a writer first. Coming out of college, I was a writer, an English major at Wisconsin, and I thought I could write. But I graduated in 2007, and then in 2008, everyone's money went away. So
yeah.
No one was hiring anybody for anything. So I just lucked into a gig at another shop, I guess we can say, and enjoyed my time there immensely.
We worked with you over there at, you're talking about WGN.
The shop before that.
Oh, before
there's
that.
Been there've been many shops.
Okay.
I've been in many shops.
I wouldn't know about that.
Oh yeah, we
completely unfamiliar. Well, thank God that we're in a town that has as many shops as we do and as many ball clubs as we do, too.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of ball players and ball clubs, Zach Collins is going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. We got the 1 o'clock news on the way, and then first-round pick of the White Sox in the 2016 draft, Zach Collins is going to hang out. I got a chance to see Zach play in the Arizona Fall League just a couple of months ago. We'll talk with Zach about that and what he learned about sticking behind the plate for the White Sox coming up. 312-591-8900. A little time for phone calls sprinkled in and out. But the news is next here on White Sox Weekly. You got WLS, AM 890.